You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported,
community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon. From the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Todd Wicks. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, April 9th, 2019.
I couldn't do any of this by myself, and she's so good at the things that I'm wretched at, so it really works.
It's all based on mutual respect. Truly, we're good at very different things, and we contribute different things to the business.
Audie Culver and Ivy Ciosi own and operate Ciosi Design, a premier wooden furniture company based in Bloomington. The two have been together since 2010 and began working on the Nationwide Furniture Company in 2012. We'll hear the story of Ciosi Design later in the program in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Gladys Devane talks about her experience as a black woman in Bloomington during the 60s, 70s, and 80s. That's coming up in this week's edition of the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb signed a bias crimes bill into law last week. Senate Bill 198 originally covered and controlled substances in penal facilities, but in late March, the bill was amended by the House Committee on Courts and Criminal Code. The amendment makes it so that a crime becomes an aggravated circumstance if, quote, the person committed the offense with bias due to the victim's or the group's real or perceived characteristic, trait, belief, practice, association, or other attribute the court chooses to consider, unquote. Indiana is currently one of five states without hate crimes legislation. Governor Holcomb began to push to get Indiana off that list last year when Nazi graffiti was found outside a Carmel synagogue. Opinions are divided as to whether this bill accomplishes that. Many Indiana Republicans have voiced their support of the bill, with House Speaker Brian Bosma saying that it, quote, you cannot name a characteristic or trait not covered under this bill, unquote. By contrast, many Democrats and activist groups have criticized the bill, saying that it leaves out language protecting age, sex, and gender identity. Another hate crimes bill, Senate Bill 12, is still in committee. That bill originally included language that would have allowed a court to consider increasing penalties on those accused of committing a hate crime due to race, religion, age, sexual orientation, and gender identity, among other considerations. House Republicans deleted two-thirds of that bill in February, including specific demographic considerations. Senate Bill 12 is not currently scheduled for a hearing from the House Committee on Courts and Criminal Code. It was referred to that committee over a month ago.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill is facing an Indiana Supreme Court inquiry into allegations he groped four women during a party last year. As WFHB correspondent Cade Young reports, Hill could face disbarment.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill could lose his law license due to alleged sexual misconduct against three legislative staffers and a state representative. The four women came forward last year, claiming the state's highest-ranking law enforcement official groped them at a legislative party in March of 2018. Attorney General Curtis Hill has refuted the claims and refused to step down despite calls for his resignation from fellow Republicans, including Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb. The Indiana Disciplinary Commission under the Indiana Supreme Court filed a disciplinary complaint that alleges Hill engaged in acts of battery or sexual battery. The commission accused Attorney General Hill of a, quote, pattern of abuse after the four women accused him of inappropriately touching them at an Indianapolis bar during the end of session party. In filing that complaint, the Disciplinary Commission says Hill violated the Indiana Rules of Professional Conduct. Hill will have an opportunity to defend himself and his law license to the Indiana Supreme Court. The result is hard to predict. The Indy Star reports Hill may face a range of outcomes, such as a public reprimand or disbarment. The Disciplinary Commission states in its complaint that it has reasonable cause to believe the complaints against Hill. The commission states that if sexual battery and battery allegations are proved, they would take disciplinary action. The Disciplinary Commission consists of 9 members appointed by the Indiana Supreme Court. Their job is to investigate and prosecute claims of misconduct against lawyers licensed to practice law in Indiana. The commission also protects lawyers against unwarranted claims of misconduct. The commission lists the facts of Hill's case in an online document which is available to the public on the Disciplinary Commission's website. The complaint goes on to list all of the accusers and why they believe Hill's actions constitute as battery and sexual battery. Despite calling on the Attorney General to resign, the Republican-dominated legislature has resisted calls to impeach Hill. Hill is a former Elkhart County prosecutor and a graduate of Indiana University's law school. He has called the allegations vicious and false. Both a state ethics probe and a criminal investigation have failed to produce any formal charges against Hill, but he could face a possible private lawsuit. It's not clear whether the Disciplinary Commission's finding will remove Hill from office. Disbarment or the removal of the state's license to practice law in Indiana would not necessarily disqualify Hill from the Attorney General's office. In nearly all United States jurisdictions, the Attorney General is the chief law enforcement officer. As such, an Attorney General may also be considered a police rank. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Cade Young.
The Little 500 returns to Bloomington this weekend. Indiana University's Student Foundation hosts the largest collegiate bicycle race in the U.S. every year. And every year, locals brace themselves for the mayhem that comes with it. Law enforcement, including the Indiana State Excise Police, the Bloomington Police Department, and IU Police Department, typically see hundreds of citations and arrests during what's become known as the world's greatest college weekend. Weekend parties have become associated with the event, as have concerts, underage drinking, and sexual assaults. The Sunday morning after the Little 500 typically sees dozens of people lined up outside the Monroe County Justice Building to receive pretrial diversions. At the discretion of the Monroe County Prosecutor's Office, those pretrial diversion programs are offered to defendants without significant prior criminal records who have been charged with certain minor offenses, most often public intoxication or underage consumption. Defendants are usually placed in a community service program, road crew, or pay a fee. This year's Little 500 race takes place on Friday and Saturday afternoons at the newly renovated Bill Armstrong Stadium on IU's campus. The women's race is Friday at 4 p.m. and the men's is Saturday at 2 p.m. Each race consists of 4 rider teams racing around a quarter-mile track. The men's race will host 33 teams racing 200 laps, while the women's 32 teams race 100. Little 500 draws some 25,000 visitors every year, according to the Indiana University Foundation.
The city of Bloomington is planning to rehabilitate the trail at RCA Park off of South Rockport Road. The Board of Park Commissioners approved contracting with Scenic Construction Services to demolish existing boardwalks and remove some trees to reconstruct the trail. Referring to a map, Natural Resources Manager Steve Cotter explained the project to the board during their Thursday meeting.
There is a loop trail at that park that is in varying conditions. Some of it is old boardwalk, some of it is relatively new pavement, some of it is limestone fines. You can see on the map up there that it's divided by the parking lot. There's a northern portion of the loop that is larger around the ball fields, and then a southern portion that goes through the woods and around the tennis courts and basketball courts.
The city plans to create a new east-west trail along Duke Energy utility easements north of RCA Park. Cotter said the RCA Park trail could feasibly link up with that new trail sometime in the future. In other park news, the Board of Park Commissioners has renewed its partnership with Centerstone for parks maintenance. Centerstone Administrator Greg May told the board Centerstone clients benefit from the employment the partnership provides. He spoke in the board's April 4th meeting.
We've seen folks that have gone from situations of being homeless or having unstable housing to obtaining their own housing in a relatively short period of time. We see less social isolation, more engagement in the community, and kind of that sense of community and that sense of belonging that so often folks in the types of situations I described don't have. And this is really a project that has been able to give those back. And I think I've talked the past couple of years just about the instillation of hope when you give someone an opportunity when they have been told no so many times before is just something that this project does.
Parks Director Paul McDevitt said Centerstone workers help maintain downtown parks, portions of Kirkwood Avenue, and the Cascades Golf Course. The next meeting of the Bloomington Board of Park Commissioners is scheduled for April 23rd.
The town of Ellettsville is being awarded more than $400,000 in grant funding to pave local streets. Assistant Planner Denise Line told the Ellettsville Town Council last night she has secured 6 community crossings grants from the Indiana Department of Transportation.
There are a total of 24 streets to be paved, and they are divided into the following projects. Arrowhead has 9 streets, Union Valley Farms has 2 streets, Kelly Heights has 3 streets, Old Ellettsville has 3 streets, Ellettsville West Side has 4 streets, and Spring Valley / Greenbrier Knolls has 3 streets.
Lyons said the town will need to kick in $100,000 in matching money to receive the community crossings grants. Interim town manager Mike Farmer commended Lyons and her team on their work securing the grants, which last for 2 years.
I think it's really a big deal for the town of Ellettsville that we received a grant, paving of streets. Anybody that's driving around anywhere knows that a lot of the streets are in disrepair and the winters have been really bad for them. So I think it's important for a lot of the areas that are going to be paved for both customer or citizen morale and just the fact that you can get up and down the street. So a lot of hard work went into this.
The town council went on to accept contractor bids for 5 of the 6 street projects.
Today is the first day for early voting for this May's upcoming primary elections. Yesterday saw the end of voter registration, but you can still check your registration and precinct ballot using the state's official voter website, indianavoters.com. Monroe County Elections Supervisor Karen Wheeler says early voting takes place at Monroe County Election Central in downtown Bloomington.
And it's from 8 o'clock to 6 o'clock here at Election Central. And the address is 401 West 7th Street, Suite 100. And we are basically open from Monday through Friday, that same hours, although that's a Tuesday through Friday, until we get to the day before election. May 6th is our last day to vote early, and we open at 8 o'clock, but then we close at noon. And then the next day, which will be election day, you would need to vote at your poll site. But we have 2 Saturdays, and that would be April 20th and April 27th, that early voting is open again here at Election Central. And the voting hours is from 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock. On those 2 Saturdays.
On the ballot in this year's primary are 5 contested races for the Bloomington City Council. In District 1, incumbent Chris Sturbaum faces Democratic challengers Kate Rosenbarger and Denise Valkyrie. In District 2, incumbent Dorothy Granger faces Democratic challengers Daniel Bingham and Sue Zgambaluri. In District 4, incumbent Dave Rollo faces a challenge from Maya Michelson. In District 5, incumbent Isabel Piedmont-Smith faces Ryan Maloney. And 6 candidates are vying for 3 at-large seats on the Bloomington City Council. Council members Susan Sandberg, Jim Sims, and Andy Ruff face challengers Vaux Booker, Jean Kapler, and Matt Flaherty. Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton is also seeking re-election. Hamilton will appear on primary ballots along with former Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge. Barge resigned yesterday from her county commissioner's position. She suspended campaigning for Bloomington mayor 2 weeks ago after an article in the Indiana Daily Student brought up allegations of sexual harassment by a former Monroe County contractor. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Todd Wicks. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Audie Culver and Ivy Ciosi own and operate Ciosi Design, a premier wooden furniture company based in Bloomington, Indiana. Like starting any business, the early days were rough, and even though they have backgrounds in art, they never received any formal training and still built a nationwide client base. They owe their success not only to their dedication to the craft, but also their special bond. WFHB correspondent Rick Brewer brings us their story.
When Ciosi Design started in 2012, they only had the essentials of woodworking. Now they have things like a planer.
And then this is our joiner.
An air compressor. A shop dog. Her name's Arrow.
And then our wide belt sander, that big white machine right there.
That's Audie Culver, co-owner of Ciosi Design. Audie also told me that when she's deep in thought on a project, she likes to listen to hip-hop and R&B because the cadence helps her do the physical work. And her favorite songs are
Anything by Rihanna. I'm just kidding. Well, I'm not really kidding.
It's a dream. It's every old man's dream, for sure. I mean, we have almost everything that you could ever want.
That's Ivy Ciosi, the lead designer and Audie's business partner. Not too long ago, before they had their dream wood shop, they were just two artists trying to find their way. Right before they started Ciosi Design, Audie just finished graduate school at Indiana University, and Ivy, as she puts it, has an adverse reaction to authority. Their art backgrounds are in things like photography and printmaking, so their journey to starting a furniture company was unorthodox. But two things were certain. They'd started to get good at woodworking, and they were in love.
As soon as I saw Ivy do a backflip 180 on the trampoline, I was like, who is this girl?
It was a back with a half twist.
That's
I was working on it.
It's the same thing.
It was forbidden love at first sight. Audie was always on my mind after that. And I was looking for somebody like her when the time came, and then she came back into town.
We keep up with each other. We're both athletic but small. And we just ran around wild and had so much fun.
While Audie was a grad student, she took an 8-week course in woodworking and was surprised how much she liked it. Ivy started joining her in the shop to help with larger projects, like the wooden frames for Audie's MFA thesis show, which featured portraits of Ivy. But the experience of making these frames didn't go so well. Looking back, it was that bad experience in the wood shop that brought them closer to woodworking.
Gender is such an issue in woodworking that when you walk into a shop, as a woman, you're often just, you're treated differently. And I made myself a dining table, and I just really enjoyed the process. The guy who taught me how to make the dining table was incredible, really patient. And then there was a new guy that replaced him, and he just was really hard to work with, really difficult to work with, and patronizing.
So instead of being in there with the guy that we didn't like,
Ivy and I decided to buy some equipment and find some cheap rent somewhere.
And we started thinking about how we would want to live and, you know, so you think about what you'd want to do when you were retired and after you've theoretically worked a long, hard life, and that's woodworking.
So they saved some money and eventually found an old RCA box factory that was renting space for $300 a month. The initial business model was to make small furniture at IKEA-like quality, but that didn't make enough money to be sustainable. And so they turned their focus to making larger, more high-quality items like bed frames, 12-foot tables, and bars. And what really helped them grow was Audie's photography. COC Design now has over 23,000 followers on Instagram, and they also used to run a popular Etsy store, which helped them get featured in magazines like Remodelista and Metropolis.
And yeah, our first really big break that led to an article in Remodelista was from just a random shopper on Etsy.
I think one of the smartest decisions we ever made was delivering that kitchen island in person, because we got to know this woman. She's the one who pitched the article to Remodelista and got it written. And she chose to like really try to get us some press, because we went out there and we hung out and we liked each other. And now we're all really great friends. And I think we realized early on that building relationships is really the way to grow your business. Word of mouth is the best kind of business you can get.
Running a business with your partner is complicated. That's what Audie and Ivy say most people think. But they see it as an advantage and wouldn't have it any other way.
Audie is my equal and I need her. And I know that, and thank goodness, you know? Thank goodness, because I couldn't do any of this by myself, and she's so good at the things that I'm wretched at, so it really works.
It's all based on mutual respect, truly. We're good at very different things, and we contribute different things to the business, and we respect each other's opinions to the max, and we respect what each other are good at. And then we also respect what we're not great at, too.
We put glue here, and we clamp on. And that's how you get, like, a tabletop like that over there.
Touring COC Design's wood shop makes their startup story that much more impressive. It's not the size of the shop or its fancy equipment. It's that they were able to do all of this without any formal training and did it with a humble, hardworking attitude. COC Design is a business that was built from the ground up, founded on not only a love for woodworking, but love for each other. Reporting from Bloomington, Indiana, I'm Rick Brewer.
You are listening to the Daily Local News on Community Radio WFHB.
And coming up next, the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana.
County's Bicentennial Committee presents the Bicentennial Journal, stories celebrating the rich history of Monroe County.
This is my Monroe County story. I'm Gladys Devane. During the 60s, 70s, and well into the 80s, most African Americans felt excluded from Bloomington's social life. So we created our own social life and signature social events. The annual soul food dinner and the annual New Year's Eve celebration became signature events within Bloomington's Black community. In the early 60s, Sue Haynes, the wife of Bill Haynes, Indiana University's first African-American architect, organized and hosted the first soul food dinner. Bill and Sue Haynes had moved to Bloomington from Savannah, Georgia, where they were part of Savannah's Black Society. So Sue was quite adept at planning and coordinating classy social events. She knew most everyone in Bloomington's Black community, and she made it her business to welcome new Blacks to Bloomington. She loved to host lavish parties, so no one was surprised when the soul food dinner became an annual signature event within the Black community. The soul food dinner was a formal sit-down dinner, complete with linen tablecloths and napkins, china and crystal, fancy centerpieces, and a printed menu. The dinner always took place in the home of the host, but Sue was always at the center of planning and coordinating this event. The food was provided by the guest, and the menu always included, but was not limited to, chitlins, neck bones, fried chicken, barbecue ribs, collard greens, macaroni and cheese, corn, potato salad, crackling bread, cornbread, homemade dinner rolls, peach cobbler, apple pie, sweet potato pie, pound cake. And one year, someone brought roasted possum. But that's where I drew the line. I couldn't bring myself to eat possum. I remember someone saying to me, "Come on, honey, don't get highfalutin on us. I'm sure you've eaten worse than that." And I probably had. Another signature event in the black community was an annual New Year's Eve celebration, which started as a small celebration with my personal friends. I told a few friends to come on over for New Year's Eve, that I would provide everything, and all they would have to do is have fun. The first year, about 30 people showed up, but it wasn't long before word got out that the Devane's house was the place to be on New Year's Eve. We danced and partied up to the countdown to New Year's. Then Jimmy Ross would welcome in the new year with a toast, a catchy little rhyme like, "May we thrive in 75. And we'd lift our glasses and toast the new year. Then we'd eat and drink and dance until the wee hours of the morning. This event represented a mix of town and gown. But after 9 or 10 years, my house could no longer accommodate the event. I tried to get word out that there would be no New Year's Eve celebration, but not everyone got the message, and some showed up. But a sign on the door read, "No celebration tonight. The Devanes left town." Thus was the end of what had become a signature social event in Bloomington's black community. This was a time when, out of necessity, we created our own social life in Bloomington. Some believe we still need events like this. I guess it's a matter of perception.
Join us next week for another edition of the Monroe County Bicentennial Journal.
Support for the Bicentennial Journal and WFHB comes from Monroe County and Visit Bloomington. More information about Monroe County's Bicentennial is available at monroecounty200.us.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Graham Capito and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Rick Brewer.
The Bicentennial Journal is produced by Kate Welch with help from Joyce Poling. Our engineer is executive producer Wes Martin with help from Kevin Oliver. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, I'm Todd Wicks.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, please email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Counterspin, fairness and accuracy in reporting's weekly radio show, providing a critical examination of national headlines. That's coming up next on WFHB. Thank you.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, for many of us, while we recognize that the priorities and practices of news media affect our lives, news programming isn't where we live, so to speak. It's creative media, dramas, comedies, even cartoons that engage us with their opportunity to stretch imaginations, shift perspectives, and reveal hidden experiences, which contributes to our disenchantment when the same structural problems that plague other U.S. institutions show up in this realm, too, as we're reminded every